You are listening to Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM. I'm Therese Boudreau, and today I'm interviewing Phil Kirpin, president of American Commitment, about the real state of the U.S. economy. Mr. Kirpin, thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
All right. So the Biden administration continues to reassure Americans that fears of recession are misplaced. They cite economic growth, steady employment numbers, and easing inflation, arguing that the U.S. economy is fundamentally sound. But with prices still high and the national debt having increased by trillions, would you say that the economy is actually doing well overall?
Well, most Americans are experiencing the economy very negatively under Biden, which is why his approval ratings are so low. And what the Democrats and the media are trying to do is essentially convince people that they've got it better than they do, through headlines and stories and so forth. And it doesn't work, because if you're in a situation where you can no longer afford to buy things and do things for yourself and your family that you could a few years ago, you feel worse off because you are worse off, and you're not going to be convinced otherwise by the president or any of his supporters. And fundamentally, we've got a situation where the increase in prices has been significantly greater over the last couple of years on a cumulative basis than the increase in incomes. And that means that people can no longer on a month-to-month basis afford the same things that they could afford a few years ago. They're falling behind where they were, when normally our expectation is that you get ahead over time, that you do better over time. And people are dealing with it in different ways. They're cutting back, they're switching to less expensive alternatives, and in many cases, they're racking up credit card debt. So we've got record credit card debt, and we've also, because of the interest rate environment and things in the sort of dysfunctional housing market, we've got a lot of people that are not buying homes. And so that may be another reason that sort of consumer spending is higher than it might otherwise be. People are no longer even saving for down payments in many circumstances, because they've just decided, I'm never going to own a home. And so the economic statistics are sort of mixed, and a lot of the headlines have been positive. But I think that when you sort of dig down to the most basic fundamentals, people who have a lower standard of living than they did a few years ago are not going to feel good about the economy. And that's the political problem that the president has.
So according to the National Treasury's website, the U.S. government has spent over $2 trillion so far this year alone. And it's funny, because they put under that number that this is to ensure the well-being of the people of the United States, which, as you just said, doesn't quite seem to be happening. Do you think that this is more of a kind of scrambling on their part to try to do something that's just not working? Or do you think that maybe there are some policies that, maybe if this is hurting people now, that in the long run it might actually make things better? Americans should just tighten their belts and wait it out, and eventually it'll help.
Well, I actually think it's the opposite that's happening. We've got a lot of government spending now that we haven't paid for yet, but we will have to pay for it one way or another. And, of course, the most likely way we'll pay for it will be another big bout of inflation. And so we've seen inflation rates go up. There was about $6 trillion of additional extra federal spending in all of the various COVID response bills, and the American Rescue Plan under Biden was sort of the last huge log on that fire. And we saw inflation run up to 9%, and it's kind of come back down to the 3% range now. But you look at the government spending that you're talking about, and it's we're running astonishing levels of deficit, astonishing levels of government spending, far out of line with any historical norms. And we're sort of getting away with it because the rest of the world continues to buy treasury debt. But at some point, we'll have to pay for it, either through major tax hikes or, much more likely, based on political realities, the Federal Reserve stepping in and buying that debt and monetizing it, at which point we'll have another big inflationary episode like we had in the last couple of years. And one of the things I'm really worried about is that the sort of the elevated inflation that we had from all that COVID spending might become more of a chronic thing. It might become just an ongoing thing that we live, with 8, 9, 10% inflation for years on end because we have a federal budget that's so out of whack and that we end up printing the money to cover those expenditures. And the near term, we're not necessarily seeing that in the near term because we have been able to borrow that money. The Treasury has been able to borrow that money. There's been enough demand for the rest of the world for those treasuries, but it's creating kind of a distorted picture, and particularly in the GDP reports. You've seen a lot of headlines, like the last GDP report said 3.2% growth, and they said how wonderful all this growth. Well, government consumption expenditures have been growing more quickly than private sector for the last couple of years, and those government consumption expenditures will have to be paid for at some point, and they've not been paid for yet. They've been put on sort of the national debt, the national equivalent of a credit card, if you will. And so that bill's going to come due, and if we don't get some significant cuts in federal spending sometime soon, I think we're going to have elevated inflation, not just on an episodic basis like we had with the COVID spending, but chronically. And of course, that would be extremely destructive to people's standard of living, the ability to purchase things, if we kind of live with that elevated inflation on an ongoing basis.
Just a reminder that you're listening to Phil Kirpin, president of American Commitment, speaking about the state of the economy on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM. So we are seeing news come out about how Congress is going to vote on the major government funding bill. Should we let the government shut down, or is that something that should be completely avoided, no matter if it's exacerbating the problem and possibly getting us into this chronic inflation? Could you talk on that a bit?
Yeah, you know, I typically, I'm not one of these people who say government shutdowns are economic disasters and we can't get by with the government closed or partially closed for a few weeks in time without disaster. I think that's all overblown. That's all hype. But my problem with government shutdowns is they don't seem to ever accomplish anything in terms of cutting spending or getting helpful policy changes in a conservative direction. We just get Republicans bludgeoned politically for a few weeks and then they cave and we end up with higher spending and political downside associated with the shutdown. And so my issue with shutdowns is more they don't seem to work very well for accomplishing conservative objectives as opposed to them being, you know, some kind of catastrophe in themselves. And the interesting thing about this current budget showdown is because of the way the debt ceiling deal was written and the way the budget caps were written, if we could actually get a clean continuing resolution through the end of the fiscal year, which is typically sort of the alternative to shutdowns when they can't agree on appropriations, they do these continuing resolutions. If we got that through the end of this fiscal year, we would have automatic spending cuts equal to about 9% on domestic non-defense discretionary spending. And, you know, the Democrats and the media go crazy about 9%. This is a disaster. There are going to be dead bodies everywhere. But a 9% cut is actually very modest in the context of the huge increase that we've had in recent years. And so if we could get that continuing resolution, it would be a small but real move in the right direction in terms of reducing federal spending. Unfortunately, it looks like that's not what they're going to do. It looks like instead they're going to do a set of appropriations bills at the level that was agreed to between the Speaker and the President in the deal that was consummated at the beginning of the year. And that deal basically keeps federal spending flat from last year. But we're keeping it flat at a very high level after this huge run-up that we had in the last several years. And so, you know, I guess not having another increase is a good thing if you want to be glass half full about it. But it certainly doesn't mean that we've made any progress in terms of cutting this elevated level of spending. They're going to basically keep it flat from where it was in 2023 to 2024.
You mentioned we really need to get some helpful conservative policies. Are there some that you have in mind specifically, and how would those directly help the American people versus these that are being done right now that are directly hurting the American people?
Well, I think we've got to have much more spending discipline overall. I would like to see them roll back the federal budget to something like 2019 or 2020, which would be, you know, we'd be in balance. We wouldn't be borrowing anymore if they were able to do that. And I think that, you know, the amount of fraud and waste and improper payments in the federal budget has ballooned pretty dramatically in the COVID era when they were just shoveling money out the door. And a lot of that, unfortunately, has continued. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to pare back a lot of just the pure waste and fraud, save a lot of money that way. But I really think the biggest policy change outside of kind of the overall spending levels, the biggest policy changes are I'd like to see a lot more work requirements on federal welfare programs. Of course, this was very successful in the 1990s with the old aid to families with dependent children. Cash welfare work requirement was put on that, and millions of people moved off of welfare and into productive employment, went on the economic ladder, and they were doing much better for themselves. We actually really benefited the people who were previously on welfare at the same time we saved money for taxpayers. And this was one of the real shames of the debt ceiling deal that was done last year, is Republicans initially in their draft version that they passed and sent over to the Senate had strong work requirements for Medicaid, for housing, for cash welfare, and for food stamps. They kind of put strong work requirements on all of these welfare programs, and they ended up caving on all of that. And in fact, they caved so much on food stamps that they actually undercut, weakened existing work requirements, which is kind of an insane thing to do because the public supports work requirements about 75 or 80%. It's an overwhelmingly popular position. And so I really hope that we'll see that debate revisited. It looks like it's not going to happen in these spending bills, but there is probably going to be a farm bill later this year. I really hope that they will look at fixing the work requirements for food stamps, because that's one of those areas where you can significantly cut government spending, not by harming the people who are on government programs, but by helping them, by giving them incentives and assistance to move out off of dependency and into work and up that ladder of economic opportunity, and they end up much better off and you save money for taxpayers. So that's one area that I really think it's important to focus on. And then the other thing, kind of independent of spending, is we've got to cut a lot of these regulations that Biden's put in. And we had very helpful deregulation under Trump. All of that, all of the Obama-era regulations and more are coming back under Biden, everything from the FCC bringing back net neutrality to the EPA's greenhouse gas rules to mandate electric vehicles, and they've got all kinds of union giveaways at the Labor Department, and just they are imposing regulatory costs, new regulatory costs on the economy of about $5,000 per household per year, which is just a massive economic strain, and that could be dialed back pretty dramatically. And of course, you know, ultimately, I'd like to see all of these major regulations be sent up to Congress for debate and approval before they take effect, and instead of just the agencies getting free rein to impose costs on the economy. So spending restraint, regulatory restraint, in a related fact, I'd like to see the Federal Reserve keep the dollar strong and not finance government deficits with money printing. And you know, if we got those elements in place, I think we could get I should mention one more, is the Trump tax cuts need to be made permanent. We're staring down at the end of next year, which is not that far off at this point. At the end of 2025, we're staring down a massive automatic tax hike that's going to really hammer the economy. So you know, I don't think we're going to see any work on that until after the election, but that's going to become the number one top issue for keeping the economy strong and growing probably in the next Congress. So those are the elements: so spending restraint, tax cuts, regulatory reform, and monetary restraint. And that's kind of the Reagan recipe for economic growth. And we can get back to it pretty quickly, but we're going in the wrong direction on all of them right now.
You're listening to Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM. And Phil Kirpin, president of the American Commitment, speaking about the state of the economy. So Mitch McConnell has just stepped down as the Senate GOP leader. How do you think, or do you think, that could affect the direction that Congress takes with spending after this?
Well, Mitch McConnell is an appropriator, and appropriators love to spend money. And I think that for all his many positives, and there were many in particular on judges, Mitch McConnell being at the helm of the Republican Party in the Senate was not a good thing for spending restraint, because appropriators are inclined to spend and to cut deals. And of course, you know, he did his big so-called bipartisan infrastructure bill, and they funded all of the green projects that Biden wanted and all the rest of it. And he got money for a big bridge between Ohio and Kentucky that he wanted for a long time. And, you know, he was always, you know, when it comes to spending debates with McConnell, it's more about, you know, make sure that they're spending on the things that I want and that I like, and then I'll go ahead with everyone else's spending. And I'm hoping that the next Republican leader will take the taxpayer perspective a lot more and kind of say, maybe we need to have less spending overall instead of trying to get my piece of the pie. And so there is a potential for a significant improvement in terms of kind of the outlook on spending on the Senate side. Now, that said, we're not going to get a change until after the election because McConnell's staying in, and he's not retiring from Congress. He's just retiring from the leadership post, and so he may go. There's some precedent for when Robert C. Byrd left the Democratic leadership, he went and chaired the Appropriations Committee and became the number one big spender and paved the entire state of West Virginia and named everything after himself. And so we'll have to see what McConnell does next. I mean, he may take the gavel of the Appropriations Committee, and he may be pushing for more spending than ever from that position. And so it's definitely something to watch and to try to influence to the extent we can. But for his many virtues, and there are many, he was never that great on government spending, and I hope that whoever succeeds him as Republican leader will not be an appropriator, will not be a member of the Appropriations Committee.
So one last question. Like you said, recession, with the way things are going, is not an irrational fear to have. Obviously, it would directly impact the American people's day-to-day lives. What would be the international effects for America? And how would that affect America's standing with other countries?
Well, the U.S. is the main engine of global economic growth at the moment. China is slowing down pretty dramatically. You've got kind of sectoral decline across Asia because of their demographic implosion, including Japan as well. And Europe is really hamstringing itself with all the crazy net zero stuff, and that's why they've got all these protests in their capitals, and they've got real energy constraints. And so the U.S. has been sort of the engine that's kept the global economy afloat in the last couple of years, and it's done so largely in spite of pretty destructive policies from the Biden administration. I've been amazed at how our energy sector, for instance, has to continue to produce at a very high level, even with a lot of hostile government policies and regulations. And so if that does happen, and you know, it's very hard to predict recessions, frankly. I thought we would have been in one by now, and we haven't been, which I think is a testament to sort of the incredible kind of animal spirits and the entrepreneurial, just the strength of the U.S. economy. It's very hard to sort of hold back, even with a lot of bad policies in place. But if it does happen, if we do tip into recession in the U.S., I think that would be very bad for global economic growth. And it would also, to your second question, it would, of course, harm the U.S. standing in the world. I mean, one of the reasons that the U.S. is the dominant global military and diplomatic powers, that we're the dominant economy. And if our economy is not producing at a high level and we don't have economic strength, then it makes it difficult for us to finance all of the other types of influence and power that we have around the world. And it also means that we've just got less kind of soft influence from being the wealthiest and the, you know, the consumers with the most demand and so forth. And so, you know, I'm not a big foreign policy or defense guy. It gets a little bit outside my area, but anything that you care about in terms of U.S. power and influence is going to be diminished if our economy is not performing well.
Mr. Kirpin, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
You have been listening to Phil Kirpin, President of American Commitment, on Radio Free Hillsdale 101.7 FM.